Srila Prabhupada ki Sri Bhakti Vaibhava ki Grantaraja Srimad Bhagavatam ki Giriraj Maharaj Jai Nitai Gopremanande. So what did we discuss last night?
Dhamma, which is the control of senses, Niyamena, which is following the regulations, Tapa, the austerity, and Dana, the charity.
What is the relevance?
The relevance is like when the Grahastha takes a sacred vow, he becomes entitled to the blessings of the vow if he uses his life based on this spoken symbols. So, he must basically lead his life on the basis of Dhamena, means the control of senses. So, although the sense verification is allowed, it should be performed for the pleasure of Krishna. It's an overriding principle. Regulations must be followed. The austerity should be performed for the pleasure of Krishna. And charity is the main anga of Grahastha Dharma. Without the charity, the Grahastha will become contaminated.
Good. Awesome. Any other points?
The identification of oneself with matter relates to what we call as Kadaigandhi. And the more one is attracted towards, in fact, it is noted by matter and spirit, so, and which is makes it more intense by sex life. The only way to overcome that is through devotional service.
Any other points?
Radhanath Maharaj says that if you are attracted to opposite sex, maybe if you want to get over and have the association of mother and cow.
Interesting point.
He says that in Gopichana Gopalama lecture, the lecture of Radhanath Maharaj, how he came from Shaman from starting then up to the body. You went down from the Brahmachari once with the Grahastha. Then Mara was really upset, you know. And he says it.
Any other points?
At home, father, husband, the present Lord. Lord. Then there is some songs in the house in the temple, husband is required. When the Lord is pleased with the service, he becomes his son. In this case, Karam is the exchange of the Lord will be pleased with your service, he will become his son.
Husband is kitchen master for the body.
Yeah.
Not in the heart, can be cut by transcendental knowledge.
And by Guru?
Yeah, this will be further elaborated tonight in the next section we're doing.
Guru, we briefly discussed the incarnation of Lord Kapila, who is going to take birth. Is he from, is this incarnation from Golka Vrindavan or Vaikuntha?
Vaikuntha. Only Goloka Vrindavan only means Krishna. That's all. Goloka means, in the center of Goloka Vrindavan is Vrindavan, then there's Mathura, then there's Goloka, there's the Goloka planet. So there's only Krishna and Goloka Vrindavan, there's no other incarnation there. Mahaprabhu and Krishna, that's all.
And Balaram?
Yeah, Balaram. Yeah, like that. But all the other incarnations are from Vaikuntha. Portions or planetary portions. Okay.
So the fact that he is a two-armed form is still from Vaikuntha?
Yeah, because he appears in this material world. So when he appears in the material world, then he's appearing as a human-like personality. But he's from Vaikuntha. Any other points?
No. Prabhupada writes about two types of expansion, kara and ansa.
What is the difference?
One is a direct expansion and one is an expansion of an expansion. Could you elaborate on that?
Well, in a very simplistic way, it means there are the expansions, and then there are the expansions of those expansions.
Can you give an example to understand?
I'd have to look it up.
So it goes to the focus, and he was dancing with the direct expansions. An expansion of the expansion is all those following Balaram, coming from Balaram, Vishnu Dattas. That's it, like.
And what is direct?
Direct is like when Krishna was dancing with the gopis and he extended, or when he extended to bewilder Lord Brahma. You know, he directly extended from himself into Vishnu. He didn't go through someone, and then that one divided by, because all the others they come from Balaram, he divides from Balaram, and Balaram divides to expansion of the expansion.
So we couldn't hear, can you repeat what number is?
So when it says kala, or it says the direct expansion, it means, for example, when Krishna expands himself from his original form, that he expands into many forms to dance with the gopis. So that's an example of direct expansion. And then amsha means the expansions of the expansions, means when Krishna expands himself as Balaram, and from Balaram there are so many different Narayan forms, then they are expansions of the expansions. Yeah, in the Chaitanya Charitamrita, or the teachings of Lord Chaitanya, if you look it up there, then it will be explained in detail. That's
good. I have a question from the last class on translation 10. It says that I read that, sorry. Maitra continued, O killer of the enemy, the unborn Lord Brahma, who is almost independent in acquiring knowledge, could understand that a portion of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So Kapil Dev is referred as a portion of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So he didn't come as the full potency, like full incarnation?
Kapila?
Kapila?
Yeah, Kapila is a... he's explaining it here just as we explained it before, is like a portion, or you could say it is an expansion of the Lord. So it's being described in that way. To become very technical, then there is one book by Rupa Goswami called Laghu Bhagavatamrita. So in that book, then it describes different types of incarnations in great detail. Rupa Goswami explains in great detail. And he describes that Purna avatar means the complete. He says that Lord Krishna, Lord Nisringadeva, and Lord Ram are considered to be Purna, or complete. They show the six opulences completely. But if you look in that verse, Ete Chamsa Kala Pumsa Krishna's Tubhaga, if you look in the purport, then Prabhupada gives some description. Then there is Aishwaryasya, Samagrasya, Viryasya, Yasya Shaha, Shriyaha, Jnana Vairagyascheva, Shanabhagata, and Tinigana. So there are six opulences. So Prabhupada explains that each incarnation may show a different opulence in particular. So Kapila, I think from memory, Prabhupada explains that he shows knowledge. Jnana, knowledge. That is the opulence which is specifically shown by Kapila. Some of the other incarnations will show all of the opulences. Like Nisringadeva shows everything fully because he's so powerful like that. So all the incarnations of Godhead are equal. They're complete. But some may show a certain amount. So it may be said they're like a portion like that. But they're the same person. It's all Krishna.
That means you are telling us he is not Shakti Vishnu. He is Krishna. He is not.
If you want to go right into the avatars, because if you really want to understand, you have to read the teachings of Lord Chaitanya. or the Chaitanya Charitamrita. I haven't studied it recently. If you really want to understand all the different, because it explains there in the teachings of Lord Chaitanya, you'll see all the different incarnations, and then explains who comes from who and. But I mean, to study it, you know, I'd have to study it for a few hours just to get my head around the whole, and I haven't done that recently. Maybe I'll try to do it, maybe, and then in this section, maybe then we can go into it in some detail.
I think it was written that
Yeah, so we have to look it up. I'll try if I get time to look it up in detail and get some deeper information about this. You can also look it up. You look it up in your. It's one of the 12 aims of the course is
responsibility
for learning, like that. So it means you have to study yourself also. So if you want to understand this deeper, then you read teachings of what you're telling.
Is incarnation is an everyday of Brahma or just once in?
Yeah, in a day of Brahma. Because every day of Brahma, Krishna himself appears every day of Brahma. Like that. So in the day of Brahma, the incarnations come. Like. Any other points?
I've got a question.
Yeah.
So they had 9 daughters.
Yeah.
First. And then after many, many years, Lord Kapiladeva appeared.
Mm.
So in those years, were they living a grihastha life or were they.
Living grihastha life, but especially Kapila Muni said to Devahuti that you have to perform austerity.
Now, before Kapila came many years after.
Yeah, so during those years, then she was purifying herself by performing devotional service and austerity. It mentions that Kardama gave her the instruction that you have to purify your consciousness.
Yeah, that's right.
Like that. So she was engaged in devotional activities, very focused. And she purified her consciousness, and then Kapila was conceived. Any other points?
One should look at the video of how Indra steals the horse, sacrificial horse, and then places it where Lord Kapila is performing his austerity, and then Angira he gets the. Ganga from celestial world that descends and all the ashes. And the Sankhya philosophy there, Lord Kapila enunciates how he assembles various elements to form a dead body, and then he injects the soul, then the dead body becomes alive. Therefore, it becomes much clearer if one look, one has access to that particular record. Because there's there in Telugu Bhagavatam, I've seen it last, not before the openness in India. It's really.
Do you have a copy of it? Or?
No, but I saw it there on TV because at the time when Bhagavatam was so was coming.
So, see if you can get a copy.
If I can hold a copy, okay.
Otherwise, we can all fly to South India.
We should talk to Ina Ramoji Rao.
Okay, so we'll continue tonight. We'll go from verses 12 to 25. And we will see the actual appearance of Kapiladeva at this point in time. And tonight we'll also get some understanding of what is the philosophy that Kapiladeva will enunciate in this, in the remainder of the third canto of the Bhagavad Gita. Like that song.
Verse number 12. Lord Brahma said, "My dear son, Kardama, since you have completely accepted my instructions without duplicity, showing them proper respect, you have worshipped me properly. Whatever instructions you took from me, you have carried out, and thereby you have honored me."
Jamunalu,
Lord Brahma, as the first living entity within the universe,
is supposed to be the spiritual master of everyone, and he is also the father, the creator of all beings. Kardamuni is one of the Prajapatis or creators of the living entities, and he is also a son of Brahma. Brahma praises Kardama because he carried out the orders of the spiritual master in toto and without cheating. A conditioned soul in the material world has the disqualification of cheating. He has four disqualifications. He is sure to commit mistakes, he is sure to be illusion, he is prone to cheat others, and his senses are imperfect. But if one carries out the order of the spiritual master by disciplic succession or the parampara system, he overcomes the four defects. Therefore, knowledge received from the bona fide spiritual master is not cheating. Any other knowledge which is manufactured by the conditioned soul is cheating only. Brahma knew well that Kardamuni exactly carried out the instructions received from him and that he actually honored the spiritual master. To honor the spiritual master means to carry out his instructions word for word.
So what are the points here?
The only way we can show respect to the spiritual master is carrying out his instructions word for word without any duplicity. And just by joining to that parampara, we overcome the four inherent defects of the conditioned souls.
Any other points?
Lord Brahma is actually praising Kardamuni for following the spiritual
Spiritual master is actually worshipped by just following his instructions.
Although we have all these defects, especially the defect of committing mistakes, like I was hearing in the lecture, Prabhupada was saying that the spiritual master or anybody for that matter may not know everything that is there. Like, you know, they have like limited senses and all that, but because they are repeating the message of their previous acharyas, and that is why Krishna empowers them, and then whatever they speak becomes perfect.
That's good. Any other points?
In the material world, people who have no knowledge, they write books of philosophy and literature, and having the imperfect senses, so such knowledge is only cheating. And the knowledge that comes from the parampara is will remove all the defects of the conditions because it is perfect knowledge.
Following the instruction of a spiritual master is actually following the instruction of the Paramatma, because a pure devotee who is acting as a spiritual master is repeating what internally Paramatma is guiding him. So therefore, otherwise, indirectly, you are trying to follow the instruction of Paramatma.
Here, Brahma is giving a feedback in one sense, that he is expressing his satisfaction. Not that Kardama is doing all service, he is not keeping himself that way. I am happy, he is expressing that. This way Kardama knows that he is satisfied Brahma. And then Prabhupada wrote, whenever he wrote letters, he said, I am pleased with your service.
Nice.
Normally for a conditioned soul, it is not possible for him to follow the instructions of his guru, word by word. But if he submits himself to the authority of a spiritual master and accepts his instructions with faith, and he becomes empowered to follow.
Yeah, good setup. So, the qualification of the guru is that he does not cheat. That's an actual qualification. Right? And we see in this day and age there are so many gurus who accept worship from disciple, but they're not qualified. They cheat. So this is very big reaction they will receive. Actually, Prabhupada mentions they will go to hell. Nothing is more inauspicious than cheating the innocent public, giving them fake spiritual knowledge in the guise of being a genuine spiritual teacher, and then giving them pseudo spiritual instruction, Mayavad, impersonalistic or sense gratificatory instruction, Sai Baba, Bhagwan Rajneesh, and whatever the other ones are called. You know, it's all bogus, and they will go to hell for their misrepresenting the Vedic literature. So the guru cannot cheat. He must be pure. And similarly, the disciples must also not be duplicit. That means they cannot cheat also. The disciple has to follow the guru's instructions. That is how you make advancement in spiritual life, by sincerely following the spiritual master's instructions. Not that you take the spiritual master just as a show. Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur, he had 60,000 disciples. At the end of his life, he's actually mentioned in his final days, he actually makes a comment. He says one of the reasons why he left was because the amount of insincere, or he said neophyte disciples, was becoming too much. In other words, people were just taking initiation from him because he was so powerful and so popular. You know, he was such a well-known guru within India. 60,000, everyone knew him. You know, he was such a prominent person. So let us take initiation from him for name and fame, for recognition. Oh, I am also a disciple of Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati. So when he saw there was too many people who had an insincere mentality, a neophyte mentality, a materialistic mentality towards the guru, then he said, better I leave the world now. So this is the qualification of the disciple. You must accept the guru in order to make spiritual advancement. You must follow his instructions. Not that you accept the spiritual master, but it is simply a show or a fashion. I'm taking initiation because everyone else in the temple is doing it. I want to be a part of it. I actually know some devotees have done this to a certain degree. They felt there was pressure. Now I have to be accepted, so I have to take initiation, but they didn't follow the instructions. They weren't following the regulative principles and so forth. It's not proper like that. So the disciple must be sincere, the guru must be sincere, then the entire combination becomes auspicious.
All the revealed scriptures are revealed to such person.
Yeah, so this is the important factor. So Kadama was given instruction by the guru, by Brahmaji, and he followed. He was sincere. And Brahmaji was qualified because he gave him bona fide instruction. That's the point. So the guru must be qualified, the disciple must be qualified, then everything becomes auspicious. If the disciple is not qualified or the guru is not qualified, inauspicious. Actually says, Haridas Thakur mentions this in the Harinam Chintamani. He said the guru should not accept disciples just for material gain. This is one of the traps for the spiritual masters. They have to be careful. They're not just accepting the disciple, oh, I'll initiate this one because they're wealthy. And then I will gain. I'll be comfortable with that. That should not be the mentality of the guru. Then that becomes cheating and the guru loses his potency. And similarly, the disciple should not be ill-motivated in accepting the guru also. Then it becomes impotent. It means the guru is not potent, the disciple is not potent, they cannot make spiritual advancement. And it's actually a very serious reaction to do either. If you're not ready to take vows, then don't take initiation. If you're not going to follow, then just don't take. You don't have to take initiation. Like that. But if you do take initiation, you must follow. That's the point. Don't be duplicit. Four regulative principles, 16 rounds. If you cannot do it, that's okay. There's no problem. Right? You can take time to get to that platform. But don't take initiation and then follow falsely. Be pretentious. Because then you'll get reaction and the guru will get reaction also. So both have to be very careful.
Take note of this. Can I tell you one story about the mentality of a Mayavadi guru? When we were living in Sydney, before joining ISKCON, I was told to pick him up from the airport, and I had a small Corolla Toyota, and he was so heavy, my tire was just going down, so heavy. And then when he was coming with me, and then we arranged a lecture in a very big hall in Newcastle City Council. And he was saying that the foolish devotees are such. Sometimes they say Lord Rama, Krishna, Shiva, Ganesh. So who will come? Nobody will come. So such
filthy gurus are also there, and we happen to see one. So I thought I'll tell everyone how what the mentality can be good. And when we join, from then we knew what is guru and how we should respect him, honor him.
And Krishna led you to a very powerful.
He gave me a difficult time to drop him back in the airport.
Prabhu, I have got a question.
Yeah.
See, Ramakrishna people, Ramakrishna mission, they follow the spiritual master, like Shankaracharya. So, actually, he was not truthful, so he wasn't qualified as a guru, was he?
Yeah, but that's a little exceptional because Shankaracharya was Shiva, and he was instructed by the Lord to preach Mayavada philosophy. So that was bhakti, that was devotional service.
Okay, so he was, in that way he was truthful, but what about his disciples who followed him?
No, they're all nonsense.
So isn't it that the guru is supposed to, whosoever is his disciple, he's to lead it, Krishna?
Yeah, but if they're sincere. If they want to be cheated, then Krishna facilitates their cheating.
But is the guru who cheated?
Yeah, but he did that on behalf of Krishna. Because Krishna ordered Shiva, you go and bewilder them, because they want to be bewildered. There has to be Mayavad philosophy. Mayavad philosophy has to be there.
So, as I understand, that case is exceptional.
That case is exceptional, because Shankaracharya is Shiva. And Shiva is Mahajan. He is pure Amala Vaishnava. Vaishnava Anam Yata Shambhu.
So we should not consider that.
Yeah, you can't judge him. You just judge his followers. His followers are not following properly.
Their followers also, if the followers apply the same philosophy and say that we are repeating the message of our Guru as it is without adulteration, therefore whatever we speak is correct, then how do we... Someone raises such an argument.
Okay, so then Krishna has instructed Shiva to come and preach Mayavada philosophy. That is mentioned in Padma Purana. Right? So, if you look at Shiva's instructions in his original form of Shiva, then he teaches bhakti. As we'll see in the fourth canto of the Bhagavatam. We'll see that is the case. So if you actually want to follow Shiva, you have to follow what he actually desires. He desires everyone to go towards Krishna. And then in the incarnation of Shankara, then at the end of his life, he indicated the same thing. So like that. So it's really, you know, basically they're trying to avoid the facts. You know, it's like when I was a child, sometimes we drive home from my grandmother's house, you know, at night time and it was dark. And then when we got home, we would pretend we were asleep in the back of the car because we wanted our father to pick us up and carry us into bed. Right? So my father would open the door and he'd stand there and he'd say, I'm not going to pick you up. He said, stop pretending. He said, get up and walk. Like that. So, you know, he knew that we were pretending. So what's the point? You're just pretending. Like that. So if you want to avoid the real issue, then you can do that. Right? But if you want to actually surrender to Krishna, that's the real point. But they're just trying to avoid facing up to the reality. Okay. Is that okay?
But who was the spiritual master of Haridas Thakur?
Say it again.
Who was the spiritual master of Haridas Thakur?
Who is his spiritual master?
Haridas Thakur's spiritual master was...
Yeah, I'm trying to work out, I'm trying to remember who it was. I can't remember. Okay.
Is it not Chaitanya Mahaprabhu? Because Brahmaji wanted to...
He was older. He was older. He came before. He was there. It's said because of Advaita Acharya and Haridas that Mahaprabhu appeared. When Mahaprabhu appeared, Advaita Acharya and Haridas were dancing together in ecstasy. So it's not Mahaprabhu. It might be Madhavendra Puri. But I can't remember. We'd have to maybe look it up in the Chaitanya Bhagavad or something. Okay. Someone else said?
if I'm not mistaken, it is Jayadvata Maharaj who says that initiation is truly not required to be connected to Sampradaya. It's only for deity worship that you require to have initiation. Otherwise, you have Siksha Gurus, and whatever instructions you receive in the Siksha Guru, that guides you to Sampradaya.
Yeah, but then Rupa Goswami's instruction in Nectar of Devotion is Guru Padashraya, and then second instruction is take Diksha. So it is there, so they cannot be avoided.
No, not to be avoided is not. He says in his argument, I don't know whether you have read that book by Jayadvaita Swami.
Which is Swami?
Jayadvaita Swami.
Jayadvaita Swami.
Because when I was talking to Vana Swami Maharaj, he pointed to that book. He says, you read that book. Because in one of the discourses, he was saying that initiation truly is not required unless you want to have deity worship.
It is Brahman initiation he's talking about.
No, it's philosophically, you'd say it's correct. But in the beginning of the Adi Lila, the Chaitanya Charitamrita, Prabhupada goes through this whole argument. He goes through this whole. Philosophically, it's correct. You don't have to take initiation to go back to Godhead. But I know for a fact that if I did not take initiation, I wouldn't go back to Godhead.
On our own, we can.
Like that. It's philosophically, it's possible. But I know that I wouldn't be able to do it. And I doubt most people would be able to do it. So therefore, that's it. Any other points?
Oh, yeah, question. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Just want to refer to your comment about it's when there are bogus guru, so nothing is more hateful than cheating the innocent public. So we can look this from two angles. The guru is bogus, and so he is giving tough time to the innocent people. But why are they being exposed to such bogus guru? And then secondly, I also remember you said once that the people who want to have sense enjoyment, they've been exposed more to the Mayavad philosophy.
Yeah, so then it's Prabhupada explains, because people want to be cheated. Why did the soul come into the material world? Because he does not want to serve Krishna. So then in the material world, there is bhakti, there is karma, and there is jnana. So if you don't want bhakti, then you're distracted either by karma or jnana. Karma means sense gratification, jnana means speculation. So you have to be, if you're in the material world and you won't surrender to Krishna, then you are distracted by one of these two paths, or both of these paths. Okay. So people want to be cheated. Therefore, Krishna allows them to be cheated. Therefore, bogus gurus come and all these things. Just like Shankaracharya himself, he's coming on Krishna's order to fulfill the desires of the living entities. Krishna wants everyone to come back to the spiritual world. But man proposes, God disposes. So if they don't want to come back to the spiritual world, then Krishna facilitates. He gives, okay, here's some covering. You don't want to come back? You want to be separate? Then, okay, I'll cover you. Is that okay? Someone else said?
If you are saying that these cheating gurus will go to hell, but sometimes like in India we see there are so many of these gurus, and you know they are not belonging to any sampradaya, and their philosophy is like bogus and all that. Sometimes they themselves don't know that, you know, like this they have to be from some parampara, and also they are ignorant actually, then also they go to hell. It's not that they know I have to belong to a sampradaya, but deliberately they are avoiding. They are all ignorant only, I think.
Yeah, so then that's their defect. Their defect is they're not. Just like you said, after the age of 12, then every jiva has to accept their own karma. Before the age of 12, then the child may do some, you know, improper thing, but there's no karma. It is the parent's responsibility. But then after the age of 12, then he has to accept his own. So that's in the material world, just like if you're driving down the wrong side of the road and the police stops you, and then you say, well, I didn't know. And the police says, well, that's your problem. You should have found out what the rules are. So the guru is teaching. If he's saying, I'm guru, and he's teaching, and he doesn't know what the proper philosophy is, that's his problem. So he has to get the reaction. The most simple. Prabhupada says they go to hell. It's very simple. Just like if one is an astrologer, if one understands Jyotish, He's an astrologer, but he misguides the people. In other words, he doesn't know the art properly or the science properly. Just like you cannot give astrological interpretation, or you cannot read someone's chart unless you actually understand the science. These days, hardly anyone understands the science, right? So if someone doesn't understand it and they give some advice, it is said because Jyotish means light, then in the next light, if they misrepresent that wisdom or misapply, or if they abuse that wisdom of the Jyotish, in the next light they'll be born blind. That's their reaction. These are very heavy things, these things. Just like you go to the Mind Body Spirit Festival and you have all the astrologers and all the tarot card readers and all the psychics, and they're all going to be receiving. It's very sinful to pose yourself as a spiritual preceptor or someone who will give spiritual guidance if you don't know yourself. Better to just keep your mouth closed. Much safer and much better. If you don't know, don't say anything. You know, if you don't know, don't say anything. Don't speculate and mislead everyone. If everyone becomes misled, you just get reactions. It's very heavy in spiritual science. So you don't take the position of spiritual authority unless you are qualified. And what is your qualification? That you follow your guru. That is your qualification. If you don't follow your guru, you're not qualified to represent.
But only in ISKCON this is genuinity is there, Prabhupada. Otherwise in India, if you go to Bangalore, everywhere they tell in 7 days Saptaha, Bhagavata Saptaha, 7 days, like everywhere it is. I don't know how to take all those things.
It depends if they're Vaishnavas or not. ISKCON's not the only Vaishnavas. We're not the only Vaishnavas. You know, Gaudiya Math, there are many sincere devotees, and there's many devotees throughout India. Even in South India, there's all the different temples, and they're devotees. Mm. You know, Sri Vaishnavas, and they're devotees. But if they're not devotees, that's the problem. There's 4 bona fide sampradayas, but the point is, you must be coming in sampradaya. If you're not in sampradaya, then don't speak. Oh, that's the point. Okay. So the next paragraph is also very. Sorry, the next purport is also very powerful. I'm not sure what purport. Sons ought to render service to their father exactly to this extent. They should obey the command of his father. One should obey the command of his father or spiritual master with due deference, saying, "Yes, sir."
What means deference?
Deference.
Deference means
respect.
In line with
respect.
In line with?
Yeah. In accordance.
To defer.
Defer has got 2 meanings. Defer means in line, according to.
Yeah, to defer means to give up your opinion for this superior opinion, to defer. So deference means to accept the superior personality, like that. With due deference, saying yes, it means respectfully saying like that. So, Chaitanya Prabhu, you can read it.
Three words in this verse are very important. One word is Pitari and another word is Guru. The son or disciple should accept the words of his spiritual master and father without hesitation. Whatever the father and spiritual master order should be taken without argument. Yes. There should be no instance in which the disciple or his son says, "This is not correct. I cannot carry it out." When he says that he is fallen, the father and the spiritual master are on the same platform, because the spiritual master is the second father. The higher classes are called Dvijaya, twice born. Whenever there is a question of birth, there must be a father. The first birth is made possible by the actual father, and the second birth is made possible by the spiritual master. Sometimes the father and the spiritual master may be the same man, and sometimes they are different men. In any case, the order of the father or the order of the spiritual master must be carried out without hesitation. And an immediate yes. There should be no argument. That is real service to the father and to the spiritual master. Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur has stated that the order of the spiritual master is the life and soul of his disciple. As the man cannot separate his life from his body, a disciple cannot separate the order of the spiritual master from his life. If a disciple follows the instruction of spiritual master in that way, he is sure to become perfect. This is confirmed in the Upanishads. the import of Vedic instruction is revealed automatically only to one who has implicit faith in the Supreme Personality of Godhead and in his spiritual master. One may be materially considered an illiterate man, but if he has faith in his spiritual master as well as in the Supreme Personality of Godhead, then the meaning of scriptural revelation is immediately manifested before him.
A very powerful purport by Prabhupada. So what are some of the points here?
Another question. Today, one of the devotees had come to my house a few hours back, and he wanted to ask about what kind of wife should give him. He's going to India. So his father and mother have no idea about Krishna consciousness. So obviously his father is going to tell him, you know, marry this girl. Incidentally, I was also reading this verse this morning. So the way that I understood this was that when this was spoken, the father and mother, this was Satya Yoga going on and everybody was a devotee. But today, father and mother can be Hiranyakashipu also. Totally misguiding their children, which is more the case nowadays. So in this case, you know, how can one say yes, sir?
Yeah, so that is the philosophy of the Bhagavatam. Devashiputapta.
Devashiputapta.
Rinam Pitrina. Yeah. Which means that if one becomes surrendered to Krishna, then one has no obligation to any forefather, any demigod, to the sages, to the general living people, the population in general, to the parents, like that.
That overrides this.
Yeah, of course, that's the philosophy of the Bhagavatam.
That's exclusive surrender to Krishna, because sometimes in the name of Krishna consciousness, because I'm devotee, you don't follow anyone and anything, and you're actually not even devotee of Krishna. And then you're in big trouble, you know.
Yeah, so don't be like that. But that's the philosophy of the Bhagavatam. That's our philosophy. The philosophy is that, just like when I went home to my mother, on the Wednesday, and I said, I'm going to become a Hare Krishna. Right? And then 8 days later, I moved into the temple like that. So then she threw everything she had at me for that week. I mean, everything, you know. And her friends were ringing me up on the phone, and everyone was just, you know, doing everything. And she said, I will buy you a ticket to Jamaica, to the Caribbean, because I wanted to go to the Caribbean, to Jamaica. So she said, I will buy you a ticket. I'll buy you the ticket now, and you go. But don't go to that temple. Like that. So then, you know, who do we listen to? You know, so everyone has to make that choice. And that is the choice which keeps you in the material world or you get out of the material world. When you come to the point where you don't listen to the parents, you listen to the guru. You don't listen to the forefather, you don't listen to society in general. At some point in time, the devotee has to turn the back and just walk like that. Everyone will have to pass that test. And that's what makes someone a devotee, that we accept the authority of the Bhagavatam. And the Bhagavatam says you don't have any debt. There is no debt. You know, now my mother, she chants Hare Krishna. She went to Vrindavan, did Govardhan Parikram. You know, got lost, you know, found me at Radhakund. You know, she comes down for the Sunday feast now at the farm and helps for the Sunday feast, you know, chops up the helps for the prasad and like that. Now, you know, she's partner. She's you know, made some spiritual advancement. But if I had listened to her, you know, when I joined up, then, you know, everything would have gone in a different direction. So this is what you have to, people have to accept. What would we do? As individuals, what would we do? We'd follow Krishna, we'd follow Guru. So when we tell those devotees, it's a test of sincerity. That's the point. And all of us have to face that same test. So we have to, that is our philosophy. Our philosophy is that you follow Krishna, you follow the Guru. It's much more difficult in Indian culture, because the obligation of parents is much more
strong,
powerful. How you want to say? It's not so much like that in the West. Prabhupada actually said, because when Prabhupada came and began the movement in America in 65, the hippie movement was there. So Prabhupada said, you know, everyone's already a sannyasi. Yeah, because they're all living out in, under the stars in the forest, and they don't listen to their parents. So they're already taking sannyas. They're already detached. And that's how Prabhupada picked them all up. Because they're already, you know, they had no attachment to following anyone or anything, no respect for any authority. Right? My spiritual master was living in a tree. At what was it called, that place?
Central.
No, it was in the Star. Prabhupada went to the farm and did a kirtan there a few months before. Something Star Ranch. I can't remember. Morning Star Ranch. Like that. So this was their position, like no attachment, like that. And then Prabhupada came and then he preached to them, and because Prabhupada was bona fide and they could see he's pure, then they accepted his authority and then they all followed him. But in the Indian cult, you see, like, I mean, I don't know how many dozens of boys have come to me and said, Prabhu, you know, my parents want me to get married. Mm-hmm. You know, and what the, and then, you know, usually I just say, I say, go and speak to Nityananda, Priya and Kripas. That's what I do. I just say, go and speak to them, because they know how to deal with all this, because they deal with all this every single day. Mm-hmm. I just say, go and speak to them. Is that okay? Any other points?
Should the disciples seek a specific instruction or wait for basically the guru to instruct?
No, you should seek instruction. Like that. Last time I saw my spiritual master, I said, do you have any particular service you want me to do? And a disciple must be enthusiastic to accept instruction from the guru. You know, whenever you see. Prabhupada said he's only... question that he ever asked his spiritual master is, how can I serve you? Mm-hmm. So we should always ask for specific. And Burujan Prabhu, last time I saw him, it wasn't last time I saw him, last time I saw him was in India, but last time he was in Melbourne, I went up to his room with Veda Priya, and he gave Veda Priya some instruction. And he said something about himself. He said, I am like this. And he said, you are like this. He was instructing Veda Priya. So at the end of the conversation, I said, what about me? Because I wanted some. And then he closed his own phone and then he gave me some instruction too. So we should be eager to get some instruction from the spiritual master. So this purport is very powerful, and Prabhupada says that whenever the guru or the father means when the father is a Vaishnava. This is what it means. If the father is not a Vaishnava, then we may not follow his instruction. Just like I would not follow my father's instruction now, because my father is not following devotional principles, so I cannot follow his instruction. But the general principle is that if the father is a Vaishnava, or the guru gives instruction, Prabhupada said you must follow without hesitation. That is the qualification of the disciple. He cannot hesitate. And Prabhupada says that this is real service. Real service is to follow the instruction of the guru. That is real service. Sometimes devotees become sentimental. Right? And they think, oh, you know, real devotional service means to meditate on Radha and Krishna. You know, something very esoteric or very high. They think, oh, this is real devotional service. Real devotional service is to follow the instruction of the spiritual master. Just like we gave the example recently, the Prabhupada was going on the morning walks in Vrindavan, and then he came back in the gate, and every morning when he came back in the gate, one devotee who was a little eccentric, he was standing next to the gate and he was reciting Sanskrit shlokas as Prabhupada walked in. And then after 3 days, Prabhupada walked in and he stopped and he said, what is that? And the devotee was a little shocked, and he said, that is rubbish, Prabhupada. And Prabhupada said, then clean it. Prabhupada said, do something practical. He just walked off. Okay. So this is real service. Real service means you have to do something practical for the spiritual master. You know, you don't just walk around behind the spiritual master like, you know, all humble and, you know, like, oh, Guru Maharaj, Guru Maharaj.
What about the mother?
What does that mean?
The mother gives instruction.
Yeah, mother is the guru also.
Sorry.
But once again, she has to be Vaishnava. Like that. That is the qualification. As the Shastra says that if one has implicit faith in the instruction of Guru and Krishna, then the imports of the Vedic literatures will be automatically revealed. Just like sometimes we think, how will I understand higher things? How will I understand about Radha and Krishna? How will I understand about Mahaprabhu's inner moods? You may wonder, how will these things be revealed? They will be revealed by doing practical service to the Sankirtan movement. There has to be practical service to Guru and Krishna. There has to be practical service to Prabhupada's mission. Right? It is not a sentimental movement. That's why, if you see in ISKCON, what is the emphasis in ISKCON? Right? It is preaching. That's what sets us apart from everyone else. Right? If you look at the other Gaudiya institutions, like there's many Vaishnava institutions. We're not the only Vaishnavas. There's many Gaudiya institutions. We're not the only followers of Mahaprabhu. Well, what sets us apart from everyone else? Right? The mood of preaching. Right? That is the practical service. Prabhupada said, do practical service. Right? Do something practical. Right? Bring others to Krishna. That is practical. Right? Assist the Sankirtan movement. That is practical. Don't just do concocted service, or don't just do don't try to attain Krishna by sentimental activity, but rather attain Krishna by practical activity, and then automatically everything will be revealed in the heart by surrendering oneself fully. Because what is the mood of the gopis? Mahaprabhu says the gopis are the highest devotees. Mahaprabhu says, right? No one is higher than the Braj gopis. He said perfection is found in the Braj gopis. What is their mood? No, not just service. It is selfless, right? It is selfless service. That's why they're the highest. What is the mood in ISKCON? Why did Prabhupada push and push and push and push? We don't even know what austerity is. You know, you listen to, you know, what our spiritual masters went through. You know, the direct servants of Prabhupada. Yeah, we don't even know what austerity is. Like, there's one lecture Tamal Krishnamurti gives, and he tells what it was like. You know, in 1970, when Prabhupada brought them all back to India for the first time, it was, you know, we don't even know what the word austerity means. You know, we can't even spell it. You know, compared to what they did, you know, the amount of sacrifice that they gave to Prabhupada, the amount of surrender, and that means, because of that attitude, everything which others may try to get separately, you know, very high realization, that will automatically be given. You see, just as an example, my spiritual master, Tamal Krishnamurti, he left his body in Mayapur, right, in Navadvip, like that. Everything was given automatically. Now, Mahaprabhu said, now, automatically, go back. Right? This is the potency, because everything was given. Right? So just give everything to your spiritual master. Prabhupada says in the purport, life and soul. That's Prabhupada's move. Yeah, that's what separated Prabhupada from his godbrothers. Because Prabhupada gave more of his life and soul than anyone else. 60,000 disciples, but one of them changed the planet. Like, changed the planet completely. His planet is not the same anymore. Prabhupada has changed the destiny of Earth. It takes people like Jesus and people like Prabhupada and Muhammad. You know, it takes these kind of personalities to change the entire Earth. You know, who's the most famous man on Earth? Who's the most well-known person on the whole of Earth? Jesus. Right? Takes the Son of God, a pure devotee. Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur said Jesus is a Shakya Vaishavata. It takes the Son of God to change Earth. Right? He's changed the entire planet. And Prabhupada is doing the same thing, changing the entire planet. So we just have to serve him, his instruction. We just have to serve the instruction of our spiritual master, and we will get everything. Everything. Beyond what we can imagine. You know, just like one devotee said to Prabhupada in the temple, I think in 74, maybe 75, they asked a question to Prabhupada, because Prabhupada was explaining about the birds that fly in between the planets. At the end of the lecture, when the devotee put their hand out and said, Prabhupada, You were explaining about the birds that fly in between the planets. And Prabhupada said, what do you know? You're still in the womb of your mother. That's what we're like. We're just so ignorant it doesn't even matter. You know, we get like, you know, half the time I walk around I don't even know where I am. Right? Just in a mode of ignorance. Like that. But if we just serve our spiritual master completely and fully, right, we will get, we can't even understand what we will get. Like that. But that is our principle. That's what Prabhupada is emphasizing.
Prabhu, you were saying about the word austerity, and we are hearing lectures from Madhavesha Prabhu in Saturday lecture. I mean, just it was a great example of Melbourne Temple, how they work through. It was amazing. I was thinking that we are just enjoying the results at the moment now. Everything is ready for us.
Oh, yeah, everything is ready.
He was saying that, you know, he has to go to the council many times and have to be put in jail in the middle of the night to come to cops. Amazing things.
Just like now, I'm living on New Nundagram, 200 acres. You know, where did that come from? You know, so much austerity was done by Prabhupada, so much austerity was done by the devotees previously. And now we have so much facility here to become Krishna conscious because they did so much austerity to do these things. Just like Gaurmandala Bhumi Prabhu, you know him? He's been to Melbourne. Gaurmandala Bhumi Prabhu. He comes. He came only a couple of years ago. Yeah, 1 or 2 years ago he came. He was also here when they opened this temple. He told me one time, Prabhupada was coming and they were doing the final, you know, fixing everything. And he said he did not sleep for 3 days, for 3 nights. He said they're just 24-hour service. And then he said, because the Brahmachari Ashram used to be where the Prasadam Hall is, he said he just remembered he walked up the stairs, he walked in, and then he doesn't remember. He passed out. He doesn't even remember taking rest. He just collapsed. He just passed out. Then he woke up like a day later or something. He just woke up and like, you know, what's going on like that? Yeah. This is the kind of austerity they perform. Okay. Lord Brahma then praised Kardama Muni's 9 daughters, saying, all your thin-waisted daughters are certainly very chaste. I am sure that they will increase this creation by their own descendants in various ways. So he gave birth to 9 daughters, and each one of them is very beautiful, just like Devahuti. But what makes someone really beautiful, or what makes a woman really beautiful?
Thin-waisted.
Why don't you read a little bit closer, Chandrababu?
Very chaste.
Yeah, chastity. Chastity is what makes a woman beautiful. A woman may be physically attractive, but if she's not chaste, actually she's not attractive. Right? Chastity is what actually is the attractive feature in a woman. They have to have complete... Chastity means they're fully devoted to their husband. Their minds do not deviate like that, but they're fully devoted to their husband. That is chastity. That's what makes a woman actually attractive. Like that. Therefore, today, please give away your daughters to the foremost of the sages, with due regard for the girls' temperaments and likings, and thereby spread your fame all over the universe. So Prabhupada says that these days, in the purport, people get married based on sex life. She looks beautiful, I think I'll marry her. He looks handsome, I think I'll marry him. Right? But as soon as there is some discrepancy in the marriage, then like that. In America, 50% of the marriages end in divorce, and I think a third of them or two-thirds of them in the first 2 years, because they get together just based on physical attraction. It says in the 12th canto of the Bhagavad Gita, when things start getting wrong like that, then okay, we'll give it up. Just like they have that saying, Hollywood marriages. You know, when someone gets married in Hollywood, it's not serious. You know it's going to be in divorce. You know, Brad Pitt and Jennifer, they got married, and then, you know, within 2 years, and now he's with the other one. Right? It's just, it's not serious. That's not real relationships like that. So Prabhupada, or the purport, and also the verse mentions, what is the actual consideration for marriage? Temperament and liking or taste, like that. In other words, it has to be seen, do the boy and girl have a similar temperament? Are they mutually? And the other thing is liking or taste. In other words, they have to be attracted to each other. Right? If they're not attracted to each other, how are they going to live together? So that's why in the previous days, when it was arranged by the parents or the elders, but they would be very careful in making that consideration, because if the boy and girl aren't attracted to each other, how will they stay together? You know, you have to be attracted to your wife. The wife has to be attracted to the husband. If they're not attracted, you know, physically and mentally and like that, they can't stay together. So it has to be very carefully organized like that. And then the other thing is temperament. Temperament has to be compatible. They have to have like disposition, compatible. It means they may be different. One may be quiet, one may be extroverted, one may be introverted. Sometimes you see the wife is very extroverted and the husband is a very quiet person. Other times you see the husband is very extroverted and the wife is very quiet. But still, they have to have a similar nature, or there has to be compatibility. Just like Veda Priya and I, we're quite different in a lot of ways, but in a lot of ways we're very similar. And it's the similarities which make the marriage work. And then the those things which are incompatible, then you can, you know, you can tolerate those things. Okay, we're different in these ways, but we're more similar in these ways. So there has to be a certain amount of like disposition or similar temperament, as Prabhupada says. Because if the temperament is not similar, then marriage doesn't work. So it has to be very carefully decided, because you don't want divorce. Prabhupada said in ISKCON, no divorce. Prabhupada started arranging the marriages in 1966. By 1972, he gave up. No? After 72, Prabhupada didn't have anything to do with them. He said, I am disgusted. Prabhupada said, I am disgusted. Like that. So that should not happen. So why should it not happen? Because it has to be done very carefully. Like that. And the senior devotees have to make sure they take care of the junior devotees. Like that. And make sure they are compatibly. And it's also difficult because there's not so many boys and girls walking around. There's not so many to choose from. Like that. So it's not an easy thing to do. That's why we have to make devotees, so we can marry everybody.
And also in Indian culture, what will happen is...
that is not the only reason why.
If the girl goes to the parents and tells something on the husband is behaving like that and all, and the parents will scorn the girl, saying that you have to adjust, you cannot complain like this. That is how we should be. That's how the parents, they teach the right thing, to be more compatible and not to fight and divorce and come home and sit like. They wouldn't encourage such a thing.
And the other thing is that in the Vedic time, if the husband and wife were going through a difficult time, she would go and live with the parents, her parents, for a period of time. And then, you know, they have a break, right? And then they come back after some time. So that should be there. There should be some leeway. You know, if the wife and the husband are having a difficult time, then just separate for a little bit of time. Have some time off, and then you can get back together when after some time.
I was wondering, you know, how brahmacharis first they serve the guru and they ask to get married, but it wasn't mentioned that the guru arranged for their marriages. They're just asking for the blessings, not blessings, but for permission to get married.
You mean in Vedic times?
In Vedic times.
In Vedic times, it meant that you'd stay with the guru for 25 years as brahmachari, but when you want to get married, then he would send you back to the parents' house. The parents organise
the.
The guru doesn't need to. Yeah, it's not the guru's business. It's actually the business of grihasthas to take care of those things, not sannyasis. The gurus do it these days on a practical level because we don't have a Vedic system set up. Yeah, you know, our parents aren't devotees and they can't organise. So our gurus take that responsibility to some degree. Some of them do to some degree. But it's actually not the sannyasi's business to organise marriages. Actually, they don't want to be involved in this kind of thing like that. So.
We see many times like Lord Ram was taken to break the bow by his guru, Vasishtha Muni, only after that Dashrath Maharaj and Kaushalya came to know that the marriage has been fixed.
So it could be like that also. Could be that the guru made the arrangement like that. I'm not so familiar with like the Vedic, what happened in the Vedic time.
He took Ramban. He heard that there is this bow breaking ceremony going on. So he took Ramban. Ram was under his care.
Actually, Rishi Shambhava's approach is that the sannyasis, they themselves are renounced, but they do arrange some marriages. It is very right thing. I mean, so they are doing that as a good thing. Like that. That's right.
Yeah, I mean, they can do it. They can do it, but generally it's not their business. Just like I remember when I... Before I got married, I had a six-month courting period. And I went to Tamal Krishnamurti after about 3 months because there were some problems due to our circumstances and so forth. And he said to me, when I went to see him, he said, actually, this is not my business. He said, you should be speaking to Aniruddha and Chintarupam. He said, because they're grihasthas, they should be dealing with this. He said, actually, it's not my business. But because he's my guru, actually, he took care of things. But he did make that point to me. He said, actually, this is not my business. And he said, the way I've set it up in Dallas, in his zone, he said that there are many senior grihasthas there, and if people are having marriage problems, you go to the other grihasthas.
Yeah. Because so they have experience in
that. Yeah, well, it's the sannyasi doesn't want to hear about what's going on in the grihastha ashram. That's why he left it. You know, he doesn't want to hear about all, you know, oh, you know, my wife said this to me and like that. He doesn't want to hear all that. You know, the way it works in Vedic society is that if the women are having problems with their husband, they go and speak to their girlfriends, to their friends, right? And if the husband's having a problem with the wife, he goes to speak with his friends. Right, and you get some advice and they say, oh, it's not so bad, you know, my wife does it to me also. And you say, yeah, it's not so bad, you know, and then you go back.
Lord Rama's method is not to add in from his guru, that Lord Vishwami, from
home. Who was his guru?
Vasishtha.
And Vishwamitra took him. Okay. Okay. I don't know the Ramayana very well, so. Okay, I believe.
Thanks.
It's okay. As long as I have your blessing, Sheikh, I don't want. I don't know. By mystic yoga and the practical application. Did we read that? We didn't read 16?
16.
We haven't read it?
No.
Okay. O Kadama, I know that the original Supreme Personality of Godhead has now appeared as an incarnation by His internal energy. He is the bestower of all the desired. He is the bestower of all desired by the living entities. And He has now assumed the body of Kapila Muni. So we should not think that when it says things like this, the Lord assumes a body, that it means His body was not eternally manifest. Sometimes there is this conception because it says, according to the desires of the devotee, Krishna takes a particular form. Sometimes it says like that. But don't think that the Lord's form is not eternal. It's because that becomes Mayavad philosophy. That the Lord is formless, but when He... A devotee desires a particular way, then he takes a particular form like that. That is not the point. Nisringadeva is eternally Nisringadeva. Now Ram is eternally Ram. Krishna is eternally Krishna. Sometimes they manifest. Prakat or aprakat. Manifest or unmanifest. But they're eternally as such. So don't think. Sometimes when we hear this kind of thing, we think, oh, the Lord is... Actually, it's impersonalism. To think like that.
What does it mean? The meaning of the word Kapila?
I don't know.
He said golden hair.
Golden hair.
Does it? Kapila?
The next verse.
Yeah, but does it say the word means Kapila? No, it says Hiranyakesha.
No, not here, somewhere
else. Somewhere else? Kapila means golden hair.
That's what Hiranyakesha means, golden hair.
I haven't read Kapila means golden hair. Is it? Further on or something?
think I'm not very sure.
Kapila. Okay. Because here it says Hiranya, which obviously means gold. Kesha means hair. Hiranya Kesha. Okay, it could maybe Kapila. I don't know what Kapila means. I'm not sure. By mystic yoga and the practical application of knowledge from the scriptures, Kapila Muni, who is characterized by his golden hair, his eyes just like lotus petals, and his lotus feet, which bear the marks of lotus flowers, will uproot the deep-rooted desire for work in this material world. So Prabhupada explains in the first paragraph that what keeps everyone bound in this material world?
Desire
for the fruits of work. Right? We all desire the fruit of work. Right? We work hard. Everyone works. Work means we do different kinds of activities in this world. Why do we do activity? What stimulates an activity? Why do we work? Why do we do things? Because we desire a fruit. We desire the result. Why? Because we want to enjoy it. Now that is called karma. Karma means activity. And it means that when you perform karma, then you get bound up in the samsara chakra. Which means you have to take birth again and again and again to fulfill your material desires and to get the reactions for your work. Because you desire to enjoy the fruit, but because you desire to enjoy the fruit, you have to perform certain activities. And those activities, they accrue karma. Or reactions, and then you have to take birth to receive those reactions like that. So therefore what does Kapila Muni's teachings teach? What will we learn in this section of the Bhagavatam? Because in the next chapter Kapila Muni, Kapila Dev, will begin to speak and instruct us. Sankhya means detachment. So in other words, the first thing he will instruct us: do not be so attached to the fruits, because all the fruits are temporary. He will give us Sankhya, or an analysis of the difference between matter and spirit. But then he gives us, because he is God, he gives us the actual remedy. And you'll see in, I think it's chapter 29, he speaks about devotional service. Because it's devotional service which cures our attachment to this world. Because we act in this world because we want to enjoy the result. So what does devotional service mean? It means action with knowledge.
It says here mystic yoga and practical application of knowledge. So first he teaches knowledge, and then bhakti yoga would be practical application of knowledge.
Practical application, yeah. Or in other words, if you look in the Bhagavad Gita, chapter 3 is called Karma Yoga. How to do your activity, but for the pleasure of God, Krishna. Fourth chapter is called Jnana Yoga. Because you have to... The problem with the world these days is there is karma, but there's no jnana. Right? Everyone is working. Everyone, you know, the whole ethic of the world in India and also in the West is just work. Work and work and work and work and work and work, right? But there's no jnana. Whereas in the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna says, you work, but work with knowledge. Right? You have to know who is the... the Yagya Purush, or the Bhakta. Who is the person who must enjoy the fruit? It is not you who must enjoy the fruit. That's the point. That's how everyone gets bound in this material world. We work hard to enjoy the fruit. You work hard to attain the fruit, but then you give the fruit to Krishna, or at least half of the fruit to Krishna. That's the point, right? And that's how you become purified. That's
workaholics. Work.
If you're going to work, then work for Krishna. That's the point. If you're going to work hard, just like Mata Dwiza Prabhu is telling us all the stories, how hard they work to establish this temple. Okay, so you can work hard, or you can work hard for Krishna, and you can perfect your life. That's the point. So this is how to disentangle ourselves from the material world. And this is what Kapila Dev will describe in the next series of chapters. This.
Sankhya, what I understand is the meaning is numbers. yeah. like numerical numbers.
Yeah.
So why is this philosophical cycle?
Because there is 25 material elements. So numbers means to analyze, or Sankhya means to analyze, or numbers means the different elements. Right, to analyze, I'm not earth, I'm not fire, I'm not water, I'm not air, I'm not ether, I'm not mind, body, or false ego. To analyze all of these things, that's why it's called Sankhya, or counting, or analysis. Like that. Lord Brahma then told Devahuti, my dear daughter of Manu, the same Supreme Personality of Godhead who killed the demon Kaitava is now within your womb. He will cut off all the knots of your ignorance and doubt. Then he will travel all over the world. So as Prabhupada mentions in the purport, and he also mentioned last night, Sankhya means to differentiate between matter and spirit. Now, what is the junction point between matter and spirit?
False ego.
False ego. Ahankara. Right? So, Sankhya philosophy teaches us how to dissolve the ahankara. Ahankara means Ishwaraham, Ahambhogi. I am the enjoyer, I am the controller. So to dissolve that false ego, so this is the philosophy that Kapila Muni is about to teach us. About that. Does it sound exciting? Please stay tuned. It's going to be very powerful instructions. Your son will be the head of all the perfected souls. He will be approved by the acharyas, expert in disseminating real knowledge. And among the people, he will be celebrated by the name Kapila. As the son of Devahuti, he will increase your fame.
See, this demon Ketuva, is it the Aitava. same as Ketu?
No.
The stars?
No. Different. Kaitava. Different demon. Okay. So Prabhupada explains within the purport that there were two Kapilas. One is the son of Devahuti, this is the one Lord Brahma is talking about. And there is another one who is an atheist, who also called himself Kapila, also taught Sankhya philosophy, but his conclusion was atheism. Whereas this Kapila, who is the son of Devahuti, who is confirmed as the actual teacher of Sankhya, his conclusion is theism. Or that God is a person. Whereas the other Kapila, his conclusion is there is only matter. Yeah. Or atheism. And there's no God. Like that. So this is not the Kapila that we should follow.
These days we have a third Kapila.
Oh, Shekhar, right? Who is the third one?
He's from Punjab.
Have you met that one?
No. Yes, I met him in Hyderabad airport.
Is it? Really?
Yes.
What did he say?
He plays cricket. He used to play cricket.
Okay. Next verse. Sri Maitreya said, after thus speaking to Kadama Muni and his wife Devahuti, Lord Brahma, the creator of the universe, who is also known as Hamsa, went back to the highest of the three planetary systems on his swan carrier with the four Kumaras and Narada. O Vidura, after the departure of Brahma, Kadama Muni, having been ordered by Brahma, handed over his nine daughters, as instructed, to the nine great sages who created the population of the world. Kadama Muni handed over his daughter Kala to Marichi and another daughter Anasuya to Atri. He delivered Shraddha to Angira and Havirbu to Pulastya. He delivered Gati to Pulaha and the chaste Kriya to Kratu, Kyati to Brigu and Arundhati to Vasishta. So you'll see some of these personalities will be mentioned later on in the Bhagavatam. There are some pastimes for some of these personalities. So about 2052, we should get to some of this stuff. Just make sure you stay in Australia. He delivered Shanti to Atava. Because of Shanti, sacrificial ceremonies are well performed. Thus he got the foremost brahmanas married, and he maintained them along with their wives. Thus married, the sages took leave of Kartama and departed full of joy, each for his own hermitage, or Vidura. So, he maintained them means he's the father. So when he got married, then Swayambhu Manu gave dowry. So Kartama gave dowry to each of the sages so that they could maintain their his daughters. Like that. Okay, so we'll finish there, and next Monday we'll begin with text number 26. Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai.